adjust the lighting on this one? Do you want me
to do it? Yeah, sure. What we do know was that people knew where to go find him.
So they were trying to stone him then?
Yeah, they were trying to, and I don't remember exactly. Hey, Ponch, read the last part of chapter 10 there for me.
The last couple of verses?
Yep.
Again, they sought to arrest him, but he escaped from their hands. He went away again across the Jordan to the place where John had been baptizing at first, and there he remained. And many came to him, and they said, John did no sign, but everything that John said about this man was true. And many believed in him there.
So they were trying to arrest him. I don't know if they were trying to publicly kill him yet. But by the end of this chapter... Oh, was that in chapter 10?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, they were trying to kill him. And trying to arrest him. But by the end of this chapter, by the end of chapter 11, we will see the Jewish opposition has consolidated itself and made up its mind to the fact that the best thing for Israel was for Jesus to die. That's basically how this chapter ends. But in between those two periods or those two points of Jewish opposition, we have the resurrection of Lazarus. So starting in chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So we get some background information. First, he's still across the Jordan. He's still away from Jerusalem. And we'll see in a second here how close Bethany was to Jerusalem. It's only about 2 miles away. But we find out that Mary and Martha, if you notice here, are mentioned as if the reader would be familiar with them. The only other place we see Mary and Martha really mentioned is in Luke. But John picks up like we're supposed to know who they are. And then he also includes the story of the anointing with the oil. That doesn't take place until John chapter 12. And so he includes a future event. And so that could mean that maybe this was a later inserted. It doesn't mean it wasn't written by John, but maybe John went back in and did some editorializing and inserted this kind of story later. But at a minimum, we know that either John was aware of the other Gospels or Mary and Martha were well known to many Christians for their name to be kind of thrown out there so cavalierly in the Gospel. John expects us to know who it is.
I think it's because the fact that they anointed the Lord that way. And not many people, at least I don't think so, did that.
And that may...
How they came about to do that.
Yeah. Well, and that may have something to do with it. Also, their relationship. We'll see numerous times in this chapter where it says, Jesus loved them. Jesus loved them. And in fact, even in this introductory kind of paragraph that we're going through now, we'll see it repeated a couple times. These are the people that Jesus loved. Lazarus was someone that Jesus loved. They were very close friends. And so Jesus stays across the Jordan even after finding out that Lazarus is sick. So the sisters sent to him saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. So here we go. That's one of the mentions. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. And so we start off again, twice now we've heard how Jesus loves that family. He loved the sisters. He loved the sisters and Lazarus. And he reassures the messenger before he sends them back, this illness will not end in death. Now, that wasn't Jesus trying to be confusing It is the statement of the grand finale of the story.
Exactly.
This will not end in death. But Lazarus is known as being close to Jesus, close enough to where while the family's in mourning, they're sending someone out to get him like he is a family member. And then we get to another point that was made earlier in chapter 10 where we saw with the blind man does not end in death, but it's for the glory of God. And again, it's one of those things where at a minimum, we have to take it from the standpoint of they meant it for evil, but God meant it or God used it for good. And we'll actually see an ironic fulfillment of this passage at the end of this chapter with the way the religious leaders were talking about this and talking about Jesus. But here we have an event lined up specifically for the glory of God. Now, do we want to say God killed Lazarus so Jesus could raise him from the dead? No, I don't think so. The sickness killed him, and that this is something that God knew he could take advantage of mm-hmm. to demonstrate who he was. An all-knowing, omniscient God,
God's glory.
Exactly, knows I can take advantage of this moment to show who I am. And this is basically what the story is about. There's a couple other details that we'll focus in on, but the biggest thing is that we see coming back over and over again is that Jesus starts off by saying, you will see the glory of God. Then he tells Mary and Martha, you will see the glory of God. Mm-hmm. Then when he prays, right before he prays, he tells them, didn't I tell you that if you believed, you'd see the glory of God? And then when he prays, he says, Father, I say this knowing that you already heard me, but those people around me can see the glory of God. And so that's kind of a theme that runs over and over again through the meat of this chapter here, is that the glory of God will be revealed. But again, multiple times, Jesus' love for the family is being reiterated. And then the ultimate question that people ask, why did he stay the 2 extra days? It says he hung out 2 days after he found out Lazarus was ill.
Because of the Pharisees, the Jewish opposition.
Well, we're gonna get that in a second, and we're gonna see that's not really a big deal to Jesus.
Okay.
At least as far as this instance is concerned. He's not concerned necessarily about the opposition. I think more importantly is that there's a timing issue in which
Lazarus had to die.
Lazarus had to die.
The glory had to be proven.
Because we say both Mary and Martha tell him later, they both say it at 2 different times, but they almost say the same exact thing. If you would have come sooner, he wouldn't have died.
Exactly.
And that may be the point, is that he wants to raise Lazarus from the dead because it gives us a good spiritual analogy along with showing us the miraculous power of who God is and what he can do in our lives. But that's just one option. We all know that there is a timing on God's will. We've all seen it. Sometimes we've been frustrated by it. But there is a timing on God's will. You what?
I can picture myself being very annoyed. Like, why would you, like, have not come? Like, right away, why didn't you come? Like, you could have come and healed him, and instead he died, and you just stayed there. And
oh, yeah. Especially where he's a close friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They believed that he could heal him, and he just didn't come.
He's a close friend, but what are you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
well,
you know, they would go farther than and realize that there's something. That Jesus would not do that. He would not do that and not go and save this person's life. Instead of just staying, you know what I mean? But I get what you're saying, too. I mean,
well, hindsight is 2020, but remember, this is an emotional time for them. Right. They're not thinking,
Especially maybe when God's they believe, up to something. Especially you know? When they believe that Jesus can heal him.
Yeah.
And they know that he can, and they've already seen him do miracles.
And the amazing thing we're going to see here soon, and I don't want to give away the plot too early, but the amazing thing we're going to see here soon is that he sees the effects of his timing on us, and it makes him sad. Mm-hmm. It makes him weep to see us weep. But once the timing is right, Jesus leaves to Judea. And so the disciples are scared, though. And this is a quick little interlude that we have because it kind of goes into what Elisa was saying earlier. The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. And are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, but because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." After saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking a rest and sleep. So then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe." There he answers the questions.
I have a question. Is verse 9 and 10, or verse 10, part of 9, is that another type of prophecy?
Yeah, I was
about the light, him as the light of the world.
I was wondering that too. It's kind of a, kind of seems like it's kind of,
indirect.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Like,
why
like
didn't
an
you answer our question?
Yeah, not answer anything plainly. But let us go to him. So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Yeah, let us go also, so that we may die with him." So and the reason why I wanted to get through that, because it gets to your 12 hours in a day thing you were kind of talking about there, Elisa. And Jesus is using a real-world example of why he doesn't fear the Jews.
Okay.
He knows he has a specific mission and purpose. He knows that while he is still performing that specific mission and purpose, he is essentially walking in the light and he has nothing to fear. And that's what people traveled by day because they didn't have to worry about, like he said, stumbling. They didn't have to worry about being robbed. And right now, as long as they're with Jesus while he's performing his mission and his purpose, they are in the light. But it also, I think, has a secondary or a double meaning there where you're kind of alluding to, where he is the light of the world. If they stay by him, they're going to be okay.
But they were concerned about him. They were saying, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. And are you going there again?" And
but what was Thomas's last? What was Thomas's words? How did it? Does it really sound like they were all that concerned about him?
Oh, but no, I thought that they. Oh, okay, no, I thought that he was talking about Lazarus, I thought that he wasn't like grieving, like he wasn't like upset about Lazarus being dead. Okay. He was being suppressed.
There is no light in them.
That's right. And I agree with that. And so I think there's a deeper spiritual meaning to this whole story here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the main thing he's telling the apostles is, trust the fact that if I'm going there, we're going to be safe.
You got me. I am the light.
Yeah. But the disciples are still trying to find any reason to get out of it. With if he's only asleep, won't he just wake up? Why do you need to go? Why do you need to go over there? He'll just wake up. And or maybe they're just not understanding what Jesus is talking about too. Because that might be part of it. Is that they're a little bit confused when he starts going into, well, there's 12 hours in the day, and it's like, I asked you why we shouldn't be worried about the Jews wanting to stone us.
When they were trying to stone him, was it nighttime before?
Well, I think it was in the day.
And so, like, it wouldn't make sense to them what he was meaning.
Oh, he was probably stumping them.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Like, what are you talking about?
Or, and this is another thing, is we don't know what was, like, a common idiomatic saying to the people he was talking to.
They probably never spoke like that in the past. I mean, they didn't have English courses that explain how...
Yeah,
you know,
like...
What I mean? They just didn't understand the parable. They never heard of those things before.
Yeah.
Or he might have just been using a really common saying for the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of safety. That's something we can never know, though. I mean, unless we find documents with that idiom written down all over the place. But everything I studied today didn't show anything that this was an idiomatic saying.
Well, this has got to be, because even, but if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. So, like, this is definitely not...
Yeah,
like,
he's speaking of spiritual things here.
Yeah, definitely.
He's talking
of
spiritual things.
It depends. Like, mine just says, for he has no light, so...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It can go either way.
Well, no, and yeah, that's a good point. And we could look up some time and see how much of the Greek is in there and how much is actually being assumed in a different translation. But the overall point is Jesus tells him plainly Lazarus has died and his death is going to lead to something important. He says, and I am glad he died, so you can see basically what's going to happen. But Thomas still, and he's got that quote, imagine being the guy who goes down in history of having your sarcastic quote recorded in the Bible, let us go also so that we may die with him.
Yeah.
And so now we get to where Jesus shows up and he meets Martha. And this is a pretty interesting conversation he has because it's one of the few cases where we see someone not understanding Jesus when he's trying to be literal and applying an analogical meaning to it. Instead, most of the time, he's trying to be, he's speaking with analogy, and the person's taking it too literal. Now we actually see an instance where Jesus is saying literal things, and she's like, I can see how that's going to happen at the end of time. And you know what I mean? And so now then, Jesus came. He found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. But Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again.
It's like almost her, what she says is like almost type of prophecy.
Well, Martha says to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. And so here she's talking about end times, and he's like, well, no, your brother will rise again now. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live, and everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. So what were you going to say, Punch?
Well, I was going to say, like she said in verse 21, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, in verse 22. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. So, do you think that she was thinking at all that?
I think she was hoping he would raise her up.
But then, whenever Jesus said, "Your brother will rise again," she still was thinking that.
He'll rise again. He doesn't say,
"I will
I'm
raise
gonna bring
him.
You."
Yeah,
I'm going to bring him back to life right
I'm
now.
I'm going to bring him back to life now.
Yeah.
But Jesus travels to Bethany. If you look on a map, it seems like it was about a two-day journey, considering Lazarus had been dead 4 days by the time he got there. He waited there 2 days, and then when he left, he got there. So we don't know exactly when Lazarus died, but it sounds like it's probably about a 2-day journey. And if you look at a map, I'll show you guys a map here in a second.
It seems like, well, I was going to say, it seems like if you're, like, mathematically, it seems like Jesus wouldn't have made it in time anyways, but that's not what she says.
Well, yeah, I think it's more of a, I don't think she was thinking he didn't come quick enough, and it might be that. I think it's more of a, I know you would have never let this happen to him.
Yeah.
Well, and you've got to consider the fact that it would have taken a while for the messenger to get to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably 2 days, and then he waited 2 days, and he got back 2 days. So, you know, it was,
right.
He could have been still alive when the messenger got to Jesus.
Yeah.
That's true.
But many people, we see that there's a big crowd here. And the reason why is when I show you where Bethany's at, let's see if it's right here. So I got a little map here you can see. And you guys can take a look. But you have Jerusalem, and Bethany is only about 2 miles. And I think the Bible even tells us it's only about 2 miles. Yeah. And so, remember, too, we've learned in the past that there are professional mourners that kind of go around and look for these things. Well, that's things that they would do. Sackcloth and ash doesn't make you a professional mourner, but that's something that they would do. And it's basically someone paying members of the community to kind of try to show how important their loved one is. Yeah. Mourn for them.
Do you think they would have done that?
But it sounds like these were friends, too. These were people that came out to support them. Because it sounds like they were in the house. We'll see in a second here. They were in the house mourning with Mary. And I think it's just that this might have been a popular family. I've seen legend that is Lazarus was one of the demon-possessed men in the cemetery that said, let me follow you. And Jesus said, no, go home and take care of your family first. But we don't know that for sure. That's just a legend. We don't know that for sure. I don't know.
Oh, like what? Yeah. Or why would anybody, whoever was demon possessed, be possessed? I mean, or why him specifically?
Why would Lazarus be demon possessed?
That's just a legend.
It's just a legend that before, that's how he met Jesus.
Or why would they assume that? Yeah.
And tradition carried down a lot of different things. Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
Because a lot
Did
of the people...
that he was just sinned over something and so he became...
I think it's just that a lot of the people that ended up following Christ and were close to him were...
people that were healed.
People that really were in need of him, and so they had such a love. And because of Jesus' relationship with them.
Saying that to Lazarus. I don't see that. Did you see that?
Say what?
If before,
no, you're getting the story backwards.
No, yeah.
He healed the man of a demon, and then the man wanted to follow him, and he said, "Go home and take care of your family." They think that is Lazarus.
Some people think
that is Lazarus. There's nothing official that says that that's Lazarus.
I'm sorry.
I'm glad that you kept asking questions so that we can clarify that. No, I'm glad that you.
But no, he healed him, and then in that story that was in the synoptic gospels, we don't.
This is Matthew, Mark,
and Luke. Yeah. Thank you, Elisa.
You said it like four times. Like in John.
Yeah.
Like every beginning of the sermon, you say synoptic.
Yeah, it's not synoptic. Synoptic means the same.
So Elisa's telling me to start paying attention to your husband.
I was going
to
say, because when I was studying yesterday's day 11, it's a little bit different John compared to Simon Peter and John, or Simon Peter and was it Luke? It's a lot different. In Luke, it talks about they meet when he's at the Sea of Galilee. In John, they talk about they meet, I can't even remember, it didn't sound like they're even out the Sea of Galilee or somewhere else.
The harmony of the Gospels.
Yeah, they're a little different.
Was there two callings?
I told Dad, get me a book about how about all the four gospels.
Or the contrast. Like,
contrasting.
I got one for you. Before you leave tonight, I will give it to you and let you look at it. It literally just harmonizes all the gospels by chapter.
I was getting a little confused.
It ain't going to help you. You're still going to be confused. Because you still have to infer certain things for all the gospels to match up.
I was thinking that in that little situation that they were talking about, it's just like a little group off of where they were in Galilee.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady was like a different, like it's a longer time in John. And, well, would it be a longer time or would it be a shorter time? I don't know. But well, think about it.
Yeah, in reference to your sermon Sunday, you know, Matthew talks about them going to Egypt, but Luke, they talk about the Magi coming, and then he returned to Nazareth.
Yep.
There's nothing there.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is weird.
Well, and they did talk about, though, he went through the purification, the circumcision.
The temple.
And everything. And then, they said, then he returned to Nazareth.
Then they returned to Nazareth. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that.
That is, And it could be very easy to hear somebody say something and be like, that's not in the Bible. That didn't happen. Yeah. Like,
it takes work to harmonize the Gospels. If you really study, it takes work to harmonize them. And at the best, we're somewhat guessing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the part where he went to Egypt? Or did they go back to Nazareth and then he went to Egypt? And well, no, because then Herod went and killed the kids in Bethlehem. So,
they left to Egypt, right? Because they had to flee away. From
The angel told. Right?
But why doesn't anyone else talk about Egypt? Yeah. Why does Matthew only know that knowledge? Especially since Luke was such a good investigator.
Yeah, but Matthew was the Jew.
Yep.
He
had the
information.
Well, you know, the fleeing to Egypt. He knew the history of the Israelites and knew how to blend in and
things that made it important.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just to recap with Martha, though, she trusts in the resurrection. But the important thing is, and this is it isn't as evident, in my opinion, in the text. And so some people may be able to argue with me on this. But he's telling her, don't trust in the doctrine, trust in me. Yes, you know about the resurrection at the last times, but know that I am the source of the resurrection. And so the doctrine without Christ is pointless. And so she's like, yeah, I know we'll see him again in the last days in the resurrection, but how does he correct her? He says, no, I am the resurrection. I am the way, the truth, and life.
Our resurrection is in Christ Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm. And so he was directing her more to that personal relationship with him, in my opinion. She was giving the right book answer, and she gave the right answer to a certain extent. But he's letting her know, no, once you get to know me, anything is possible, because knowing me is knowing the resurrection. And so then she has the normal response. Martha confesses the Christ. And so she is one of the first people to recognize Jesus for who he is. Now, I don't know why he would tell someone that he couldn't go and preach about him afterwards.
Yeah.
Seems like a big waste of time.
Like that, a lot of presence from God.
And so remember this interaction he has with Martha, because Mary comes to him and says the same exact thing that Martha starts off with, and Jesus responds completely different. And so we see, when she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, she was Martha, saying in private, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. And when the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled, and he said, Where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. So the Jews said, See how he loved him. But some of them said, Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? And so Mary is in mourning. And the two, again, the two different styles in which Jesus responds here needs to remind us that there is no one way in which we bring comfort. Martha wanted an explanation on what's going on. Mary obviously didn't want that. She was surrounded by people mourning with her. And when she hears Jesus is here, she rushes to Jesus. But notice that she doesn't add in the second part that Martha did. But I know you can do anything you ask God for. She is just heartbroken that her brother died and Jesus wasn't there. And we see, too, and this is something that people want to, especially nowadays in our American culture, people want to remove from Jesus. Because, yes, this can get tricky and it can get ugly, and some people take advantage of it. But the emotions of the event get to Jesus. There is no such thing as an emotionless gospel. There really isn't. And anyone that tries to, we don't want to overdo emotionalism. We don't want to be sitting around wailing at the top of our lungs or acting like a fool. Unless there's something going on that deserves that. Like if I find out one of my kids have died, guess what? You're going to hear wailing. You know what I mean? But we also need to be weary. And I've said this over and over again. We need to be weary that if you have not had an emotional experience with Christ, you need to take inventory of your salvation and look at it closely. I'm not going to say you're not saved, but what I am going to say is that coming to Jesus is an emotional event. Why? Because he died in my place. That should stir up something in you. And we see that even Jesus, his emotions get stirred up in him. He wasn't just some robot or even more kind of the way we paint it, just some stoic prophet going and just putting out pithy statements for people to be like, oh, wow, that's amazing. He saw what his waiting did to Mary and Martha, and it hurt him, though it had to be.
I'm trying to relate their response to how they were. Martha was the one that was still working and preparing, and Mary was at his feet listening to him.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to see if there's any.
Yeah. Well, even now, Mary was back, like, she's more relational, I think, and Martha is more like
busy. Well, yeah,
Martha went
back to Mary and told her. She didn't stay with Jesus. She was going back to arrange
things. She was trying to work things out. In her mind, she had to make sense of this more than anything.
Yeah.
And once she made sense of it, she went back to get Mary. But then when Mary came, it was all emotions. You know what I mean? It was all. But the good thing is that we have a Savior that knows our troubles and may even use our troubles, but he still mourns with us. And we need to remember that. And in fact, if we look at Hebrews chapter 4, I like this verse. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need. When we go to Christ and we're upset,
can you see it?
Yeah.
When we go to Christ and we're upset, this is someone that shares in our pain. Even if it is pain that is self-inflicted, even if it is pain that will bring him glory, even if it is pain that we may be deserving.
Our inner doubt, like.
We don't have a God that sits up and is like, yeah, that's what you get. If you would have trusted me more. If you guys would have trusted me more.
Sense.
No. But that's the way we like to, some people try to view him. He hurts with us. That's what makes him such a good high priest. When we are falling down, repenting of our sin, he sees the pain and he empathizes with us because he's been tempted just like us. He knows the struggle we do. It doesn't give us an excuse to sin, but he knows how hard it is. Hebrews, on three different occasions, talks about how Jesus identifies us very closely. Once in the very beginning, once in the very middle, and once at the end. And we lose that a lot of times in the book of Hebrews because it's a very much a doctrine book. It goes very deep into different doctrines and all that.
So what are those three things?
I'm just saying that it makes it very clear in one of the most important doctrinal books connecting the Jewish faith with the Christian faith that we have. It's repeatedly stated how he had to become just like us and how he knows what we go through. He sees us and he's with us. He was fully man, is the best way I think to put it. But so Jesus was troubled. He starts to cry, and some look at that and they say, oh, look how he loved them. But of course, there's always others in the crowd that kind of use your weakest point against you. Well, if he was so upset, why didn't he keep him from dying? He obviously could do it. He healed the blind man. Why didn't he do this? Not realizing that even Jesus had to experience some emotional pain and turmoil to see the glory of God done. Not because Jesus needed to cry, but because the timing had to be perfect. There was a reason. One thing about this story that we know for sure is that there was a reason for the specific timing. It's obvious.
Even Christ dying on the cross had to be a specific time.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a minute. That's where we're going to get to at the end of this chapter. Because we're going to see people that are open to seeing God move. And this is where we're at. We're in the midst of a story of a group of people that are open to seeing God move. Mary, Martha, Lazarus, they're basically the good guys of this narrative right now. And they're open to anything God is willing to do in their life. There is no limits to their imagination. Martha explained it. We know you can do anything. And so then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. And Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead for 4 days. Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. And when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The man who had died came out with his hands and feet bound with linen strips and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go.
Do you look like a mummy?
I think so. Probably not like, I don't think
not
it was like
Egyptian. I think it's,
but I think like strips just laid over one over the other. Well, no, they probably wrapped him up pretty tight.
Why his hands and feet were bound.
You think he hopped out? Hopping up. And so Jesus lets them know that they are about to witness the glory of God. That's what he starts off with, Martha. He said, didn't I tell you that? What? Read the exact phrase in there. And that's kind of the culmination of the promise to all of us. I mean, this is, while we still believe Jesus can raise the dead literally, and sometimes we pray for that, this story is very much an analogy of us, of who we are, of us being dead in sin and needing Christ to raise us from that death And then also knowing that if we believe, we have seen the glory of God in our own life, working in our own life, forgiving us of our sins. And that's enough sometimes for us to know that he is such an amazing God and he can work miracles. But also, the prayer is something too that I like to focus on in this passage, because I like what he says there, where he says, I'm praying this way, not because I need to know again what you sent me here to do, basically, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that those around me may hear what I have asked and know that you sent me. Mm-hmm. And so his prayer is out loud so others can know that it was God who raised Lazarus. And that's why we pray out loud for and amongst each other. And that's why Paul even says later, if you're praying in a way or in a language no one can understand, how can anyone agree with you? Likewise, our prayers for each other were oftentimes, I shouldn't say oftentimes, the Bible makes it clear, we're saying things God already knows. But that's encouragement for each other. When we see the fulfillment of these things, we know and we remember, so-and-so asked for this. So-and-so said this. We know he hears us. We know he hears our thoughts. But me and you need to hear him sometimes just to know he's real, just to know that he's working. And so there is no doubt about what is about to happen. He makes it very clear what's about to happen. But then Lazarus is risen from the dead. And he must have been fully dead because they were worried about the smell. They had the tomb all blocked up. He was bound up with all kinds of stuff. And he is risen. But the religious leaders get wind of this. And so, of course, their answer is, we got to kill him. And it turns out they were trying to kill Lazarus, too. We find out later when he's in the Passion Week that because Lazarus was raised from the dead, he had to get killed. But then also Jesus has to die now. Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council, that's the Sanhedrin, and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it is better for you that one man should die for the people, not that the whole nation should perish. He did not say this out of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day on, they made plans to put him to death.
I find it amazing. I think of this. These people just witnessed this person walking, hopping, whatever, out of the grave, and yet it doesn't touch them. It doesn't.
I know.
You know, how could you stand there, see somebody resurrected from the dead, walk out of the tomb, and still question it, or you know, run to the authorities because he did this. He did this. It just boggles my brain.
Let me guess. It's on a Sunday.
Because because sometimes, I mean, I had someone once asked me, do you believe Jesus really walked on the water? You know, and it's hard for some people to believe these things, but to have seen it and not believe, that is just, that, like I said, that boggles my brain.
I know. I absolutely agree. It's right there. He's right there performing all these miracles, and you do not believe. Mm-hmm. Or they believe and they don't want to believe. They want him stoned, they want him dead.
Well, and there's something more amazing we're going to point out here in a second. Jesus, therefore, no longer walked openly among Jews, but went from there to the region near the wilderness to a town called Ephraim, and there he stayed with the disciples. Oh, we got a whole other paragraph. Hold on. Now, the Passover of the Jews, I'll show you a map here in a second. It's quite a ways away. He went pretty far. Now, the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. They were looking for Jesus and saying to one another as they stood in the temple, "What do you think, that he will not come to the feast at all?" Now, the chief priests and the Pharisees had given orders that if anyone knew where he was, he should let them know so that they might arrest him. And so I want you to, that first part is so amazing to me because, first of all, what are they scared of? They're scared of the Romans coming in and basically taking over Jerusalem and what they have of Israel. And they're very concerned about their status and about their safety, but they're not concerned with trying to figure out what the will of God is. Mm-hmm. They're more worried about playing political games. And the thing is that they were told exactly what Jesus' purpose was in a prophecy. It said he would die for the entire nation, and not only die for the entire nation, but to bring all of God's children together as one as a result of his death.
I meant that they believed, but they just wanted him dead.
Well, and I think it's more sinister than that, yeah, in the fact that they have allowed their mind to be made up so convincingly that Jesus was bad, that even when they're given the prophecy about what he's going to do, they already had their mind made up. And they didn't realize it, but they became the villain of their own prophecy that they were given. They became the ones to go and seek out to kill Jesus, which fulfills the prophecy. But they think they're doing it to preserve the land. They think they're doing it to keep the Romans out, and it turns out they're the ones that ended up fulfilling the wrong side. And if we look at history, what happened to what they feared ended up happening anyways, within a few short decades of Jesus dying. Within 3 or 4 decades of Jesus dying, the Romans came in and completely and utterly destroyed Jerusalem. Destroyed the temple, destroyed, killed all the people in there, lined the roads with crucified bodies, and basically wiped out it as a nation that and wasn't seen again until 1945. 45, 47. Anyways, mid-40s.
About when Israel became a nation.
You got the right decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the 40s.
But what they didn't realize is that, and this is something that we got to be careful about, is that we can make up our mind in such a way on how God is supposed to act, mm-hmm, that even when he gives us the answer to our prayer, we interpret it completely backwards. And that ends up being a dangerous thing because we have the encouragement from knowing God is speaking to us, but we have the prideful ignorance of not taking the time to look at his will. And zeal without knowledge is just very, very dangerous.
That's what Paul had when he first started.
Exactly. It makes you Paul. Mm-hmm. Makes you someone who is willing to hear a prophecy and already decide, I know exactly what he means by this. Mm-hmm. He means we're supposed to go kill him. And technically, yeah, ironically, yeah, they were the ones that were supposed to go kill him. But they could have easily looked at that prophecy and realized the purpose of why Jesus was truly here on this earth. But since in their mind, Jesus was already bad, there was no examination there.
Well, wasn't already his death prophesied clear back in the Old Testament, even mm-hmm on the cross? Didn't speak of the words of him being, I mean, we just read about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't add up. I don't understand the Pharisees whatsoever.
I just find verse 51, he did not say this on his own, that as high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't know. He should have known. He was the high priest.
Yeah, exactly.
He said it too, that he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation.
He was given all the answers, and he still missed
the exact opposite as dying for the nation, like Think about like the exact opposite meaning of that.
Caiaphas thought, if we kill him, then it's going to preserve us. We'll be okay with the
yeah. That's what they meant. Exactly. The Romans won't bother us.
Yeah, that's what he was.
Oh yeah.
Thinking.
Exactly, and he thought he was being told to move forward as a politician. And it's just an amazing thing on how someone can have all the right information and still come up to the completely wrong conclusion. Jonah's another example. Jonah was someone that was given everything. And he still ended up at the wrong place because in his mind, God was only supposed to act a certain way. And the same thing is with these high priests and Jesus. In their mind, he was only supposed to say certain things, and if he didn't fit that mold, there was no room in them to evaluate. It was either it's this way or you're an enemy, and they ended up becoming the villains of their own story, basically. They ended up becoming the villains of the story of how God came to save the earth.
It really disgusts me to do this. That really disgusts me.
We were talking about Jonah and in a Bible study and how he knew God would forgive them. That's why he didn't want to go to him. He knew he would. I mean, he was confident. He didn't, but he didn't want to see him forgiven because of what they were.
Exactly. He knew, no, you're exactly right. He knew the message he was supposed to go give. Mm-hmm. He knew what the plan was. You don't send a prophet really to just say, I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah.
And in his mind, they didn't deserve that message.
That's right.
And so, likewise, we as Christians can make up our mind on exactly what's supposed to happen and how things are supposed to be and end up completely missing the point, even though God does answer our prayer.
It's like Moses speaking to the Israelites over and over and over again that they fall away from God, and yet God forgives them, and they come back, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. In the end, Moses, what does he do? Sing a song of mourning or something? He sings.
Sure. Sounds good.
About, well, I read it in my gospel.
There is a song of Moses. I'm not too familiar with it. And so if you look, he moves quite a bit of ways. Remember from our Old Testament study, Bethel. He goes up north from Jerusalem, past Bethel. To Ephraim, it's in the middle of the hills, in the middle of nowhere. And that's where he withdraws with his disciples. And I don't think we see him again until we get into the Passion Week. But now the Jews are openly seeking to arrest Jesus because they think they're fulfilling prophecy. They are fulfilling prophecy, just not the way they think they are.
It's their own selves.
Yep. And so, some of the lessons I got from this. Martha, doctrine is not meant to understand, or doctrine is meant to understand Jesus, not replace him. We have to, and this is a problem with the church. As soon as a church gets established, this is one of the biggest issues, is that we live as if we're meant to fulfill the doctrine or the bylaws or whatever of the church, instead of remembering how these things relate to Jesus and how do they help us accomplish our mission. The disciples, Martha, Mary, and the crowds all had to learn to trust Jesus. And so that's an important, learning to trust Christ is one of the important themes in this, is that the disciples had to trust him that they're not going to go get killed. Martha had to trust him that he was going to keep his word. Mary had to trust him that he cared. The crowds had to trust him that he was going to do what he said he was going to do. But trust is probably one of the main themes in this. And Jesus not only understands us, but also relates to us on an emotional level. Some of us need to hear that. And finally, the Pharisees.
This will be on the app too.
He understands absolutely what
the slides will be.
He knows everything.
I forget because I haven't downloaded
that app. Relates to God. He mourns with us because he understands, and that he's God and knows everything and knows exactly what you've been through. So he already knows, and he knew before it even happened. Is how I think of it.
But here's the one thing we can remember as Christians. This is something to religious people. We will always participate in the will of God, but we decide if we're the villain in it or not. And that's where we have to be open, not only to the strict letter of the law, but also we've been given a Holy Spirit. We've been given other Christians. We've been given people to let us know that what we think and what we determine is not always the most right answer. Most right is probably the best words to use there.
I have a question.